Hello, everyone. This is Tom Uren. I'm here with the Gruck. G'day, Gruck. How are you?
G'day, Tom. I'm good. And yourself?
I'm well. This week's Between Two Nerds is brought to you by Kroll Cyber, who have a cyber incident response and security service. Last couple of weeks, Gruck, there was a thing I wrote about where somehow Russian intelligence, it seems like Russian intelligence services, intercepted a German military WebEx meeting. And there were a number of high-ranking military officials, and they were basically preparing a brief for the Minister of Defense. And the brief was looking at the implications for Germany if they gave Taurus cruise missiles to Ukraine.
Right.
And that conversation was intercepted. There's lots of different ways it could have been done, but the German initial investigation.
I mean, that's just technical stuff. That's not really, that's not what our audience is here for.
You know? Well, I guess there's two things. We don't know at this point, and the initial investigation blamed it on one of the officers who was in Singapore dialing in on an unsecured line.
Right.
And however that happened, then it was published by Margarita Simonyan. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. She's the editor-in-chief of RT, which was formerly Russia Today, and that's essentially state, I guess it's a propaganda outlet almost, disinformation outlet.
It's pretty much an organ of the state.
Yeah. What we're going to talk about is just that Russia took this conversation, which was about what are the implications for us giving these missiles to Ukraine? Like, what will we have to do to support it? How involved does it get us in the war?
A lot of it is just logistical stuff as well. It's not even, you know, like, theoretically, what does this mean for our political situation? It's like, a bunch of it was like, you know, how many spare parts do we need to ship them? And what sort of connector do they need? And how long will it take to source them?
Yeah. You know, like, so it was a moderately interesting meeting. And I think from an intelligence point of view, it was definitely reportable intelligence. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, I don't think it would have been secret or top secret. Like, I think secret or top secret is we are preparing to invade and this is our plans. Or here are specific, you know, capabilities or countermeasures that would work against these missiles.
Right. Or even, you know, these are the dates and locations of delivery and the warehouse it's going to be stored at for.
Yeah. Now, the Russian portrayal of the meeting was the Germans are preparing for war. and the Russians published the entire 38 minutes of that phone meeting.
A technical phone call between high-level military bureaucrats, but bureaucrats nonetheless, talking about technical details.
And so there were several interesting things. First of all, there's what are the Russians trying to achieve? And I thought it was interesting that however they collected this, they're willing to burn that access to have this kind of political effect, presumably on Germany.
Right. So I'm just going to wildly speculate that whatever they were doing was probably at the hotel rather than on the guy's phone.
Right.
Because it seems to me that just value-wise, we have an agent inside the same hotel as most of the people at this defense fair are staying at. Like, he's hacked the internet, he's dumping everything, and somehow his Wireshark picked this up. You know, like, that's the sort of thing that if you lose it, you didn't have continuing access anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, yeah. So the minister said that the reason that officer was in Singapore was for an air show. There was a lot of European military officials in Singapore for that air show, and he said there was, I think his words were something like, there was hacking going on everywhere. So probably not the best idea to use an unsecured line. Anyway, now my take was that the whole point of releasing this seemed to be about the Taurus missiles. You disagree?
No, I think the Taurus missiles are sort of the entry point into this. I think that there's this larger conversation that they're trying to, you know, I don't disagree that it is about the Taurus missiles, but I think it's the Taurus missiles are the hook that they're using to help apply pressure on the don't help Ukraine. They're just about to lose anyway. You know,
it's unlike you to think of the big picture, Gra.
I know. I'm usually just sort of so lost in the weeds, I can't see what's going on. But
so the background is that there's, I guess, constituencies in Germany that are less keen to provide aid to Ukraine. Germany is actually the second biggest provider of military aid after the US, which is a surprise. But there's constituencies that are for more aid and some that are for less. And sort of portraying it is as Germany is preparing for war, it seems to me gives ammunition to the more reluctant side.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is it's Eurocentric, the way that that's framed, right? Like, Germany preparing for war is the sort of thing that France gets terrified about every 50 years or so. And it's also the thing that sort of plays really well in Germany right now as a thing to avoid. Like, there's a little bit of a psychological hangover, right? And it shows up in weird ways. Like, they're willing to give like however many billion dollars to their army to make it better. And they, you know, haven't done anything. They don't have a single war studies department in the entire country. Right? Like, none of their universities actually study the stuff anymore. Like, it's all been gone away with. Mm. So, you know, there's a sort of psychological hang-up they have about the military. Like, they very much are peaceniks. They're deeply, deeply ambivalent about the idea of any sort of military anything. Having some sort of hand in this is... like, it's a psychological thing for a lot of people. You know, I saw one exchange on Twitter where a guy was shouting about it at a friend of mine about, you know, like, you can't see the problem with German weapons killing Russians.
Right.
It was very much a psychological thing. Like, I don't see a problem with German weapons killing Russians. I don't think the Russians care what kills them. They don't want to be dead. I think that that's, you know...
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it's a Ukraine-Russia thing.
Right.
It's like who's firing the weapon is probably more responsible than anyone else. The other argument that has been used specifically for those missiles has to do with the range and the possibility of striking targets deep within Russia. Now, I guess there's a sort of bigger point about the media coverage. So, when I was looking at it, there was some article said the range is comparable to missiles that the French and the British have given.
The Storm Shadow, which they've been using already. Yeah.
Yeah. And the deal there was the Ukrainians promised they wouldn't use it to target into Russia. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're wanting to support the war, you take that promise and go, yeah, that's fine. We can live with that.
Yeah. They've done it with a number of weapon systems, and over 2 years, even in desperate times, they've stuck to it because they want to get
the weapons.
That's
right.
You know,
I guess they can scrounge together other sorts of systems that they can use for longer strikes off AliExpress or something.
Right. If they want to blow something up in Siberia, they're not going to, you know, use a missile anyway. They're going to use a guy, you know, with a backpack on a train.
Yeah. And so back to the media point, some articles said the range is about twice as great as the Storm Shadow. And when I looked at the actual specs, because I do my homework, it was not twice as great, but twice as far. And so
I wonder who told them that, right?
Well, I guess this is the whole interesting thing about it's interpreted through the lens of the media.
Yeah.
Some media said that. And the other interesting thing is that there's this 38-minute audio meeting, and it was actually very hard to get any reporting on what it actually really said.
Yeah.
So there was reporting that said, this is what the Russians say it is.
Right. And then there was the 2-minute clip that I listened to, you know, here's the way that I interpret what was probably meant, you know, out of context.
And so it struck me as, from a Russian point of view, 38 minutes of audio.
Ain't no one got time for that.
That's right. Exactly. We can publish the whole thing. This is great. No one.
Yeah.
There's going to be like a few people who are going to listen to it, but it doesn't matter.
a bunch of nerds who can't communicate anyway, right?
And I guess the alternative would be to edit it, right?
Yeah.
And if you edit it,
I think that has a problem. Wouldn't work for them. Yes, yes. We're thinking the exact same thing. Go for it.
Well, what are you thinking?
So I'm thinking that, like, if you edit it, people will go, ah, this is out of context. You know, what are they actually hiding? Because it's probably nowhere near as bad as they imply.
Yeah.
And you can get away with that in some situations. And I think that if they released an edited version, they would make the release more of the story than the content. Right? It would be the, why did they edit it? What was it that they were doing? It would shift focus from the narrative that they're trying to build onto the way that they try to build a narrative, which they don't want. It's very much ignore the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Right? They don't want people seeing that. Yeah.
And I guess another alternative would be to kind of fake it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a lot of real audio and then just add some extra stuff. But I think it lends itself to being debunked. Whereas this,
right,
you can't debunk it. Yes. It doesn't say what they purport.
Right. And what's even better about it is because it's so long and boring, you can debunk any debunking because no one will have done the homework.
Yeah, so if
someone says, well, that's not actually what it says, you could just go, well, yes, it is. Right? And it's very much a he said, she said. It's unknowable.
Yeah. I know some TV commentators who do exactly that. They'll say things like, well, I've read the report. Have you read the report? And then they'll say something that seems plausible and might, could well be from the report, but they rely on the fact that nobody reads the report. Maybe they read the executive summary. So that struck me as very clever. And, if the Germans had a 3-minute meeting.
Should we do it? I don't know. It'll be hard logistically. Okay, bye. I mean, that would...
this wouldn't be a story. Because people could listen to 3 minutes.
Exactly. Well, I think one of the things that plays against this is the way that the media does things, where there's this strong desire to give my interpretation of the events rather than here's the raw data and here's the summary and the interpretation that I'm providing alongside it, so that it's actually hard to track it down. It should be linked in the first paragraph. And, an audio file was released of, link right here. It should be basically the first sentence or something. You should be able to immediately go to it and transcript here for people who are not German speaking or whatever. It should just be right up in there and at least encourage people.
Right. I guess another interesting question is, I guess at this point it's not a question, right? It's like there's a very clear link between RT and intelligence services, if you had any doubt. But what do you think the value in air quotes laundering it through RT is? Like, she actually said, I got it from my comrades in uniform or comrades in arms, depending upon the translation.
Right.
So it says that there's a link. I'm just happening to publish it because I've got a public account that's got lots of followers.
I think there's two things going on with that. One is the audience for RT... They're preaching to the converted. They're preaching to the choir. You could go out and say, like, Putin dictated this to me and I'm passing it on. And they'll go like, well, that's pretty solid stuff. The other thing is, I think at that point, by what they're doing by saying it came from the military is establishing credibility.
Right.
You don't say like, this was lying on the side of the road and I just picked it up and it happens to be a 38 minute of, they're saying, this comes from a reputable source who would have the capability of stealing it. This is authentic material. I think that's what's going on there. Is it's very much the audience that they're going for is kind of on their side anyway, and is not going to be critical of any of the circumstances. And by saying it came from the real intelligence services, that just makes it credible. It adds authenticity. At that point.
And it seems like RT is actually a better outlet than the Kremlin publishing it would be, for example.
I think what the phrase is like implausible deniability.
Yeah.
even though they literally just said, the military gave this to us to publish, it's still better than the military publishing it themselves.
Yeah.
And I think one other thing with using RT is if the military publishes it, framing it with a narrative is a lot harder because the military can go out there and be like, here is what they're actually trying to say, and then have people take it seriously.
Right, yes.
The military can't really do that. Whereas if you've got a journalist saying, you know, I've listened to it and here are the key themes, that's credible. You know, that's at least a plausible source.
It's notionally plausible in that theoretically ideal journalist would do that with some level of objectivity. And it seems like when you've got 38 minutes of audio, any reporting you're going to read is going to have some lens applied on top of it. So I went as far as finding the audio, downloading it, running it through Whisper, which is amazing. It does the voice recognition and translates it from German to English all at once.
Oh, wow.
which is amazing, except it didn't really work. So, and, you know,
the future is here.
Almost. And it didn't work in some weird way that I could, like, it would transcribe some of it and then it would just stop. But then it turns out reading transcripts is actually really hard to figure out what people are talking about when there's so much context underneath. And so even after doing all that, I couldn't have debunked it myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have written something totally bogus, which is what the Russians did.
I remember reading a book many years ago that had all these sort of like these marketing tips sort of intermixed with the actual text. And there were sort of like these very legitimate, real ways of doing things. And one of them was like, if you have a movie and it stinks, it's terrible. The way that you market it is you don't give it to critics. You don't let them see it before opening weekend. You go heavy on the advertising push. You know, you build up the hype for it. And then you try and make all of your money on that first weekend before people have learned that it sucks.
Right.
And I think that's the sort of strategy that you take on when the thing that you have is just, it's kind of a nothing burger. Like there's not really anything there. You have to go on hype. And the way that you do that is you sort of go heavy, release something quickly, and then try and capitalize on it while you can. And I think in a prolonged war, you don't have an opening weekend, right? You just have over and over again, anything that you can do to prolong things in your favor is worth it.
Right. So I guess you're saying that even though they might not know that this would have any sort of impact, it seemed like an opportunity. Let's just take a shot on goal. Is that the American terminology?
Yeah, I think so.
Just have a crack and see what happens. It's unlikely to make the war worse.
Right, exactly. It's what's the worst that could happen? You know, on the plus side, maybe it tips the balance, you know, against Taurus. And in the worst case, they do what they were going to do anyway. So there's nothing to lose, and it might play out for something. They're aware that there's a chance it would work. The audience that they're playing to is at least receptive to the narrative.
Yep. So I think, and the audience you're talking about is the people who are less keen on involvement in the war.
Right. I think that they're talking to Europe in general and Germany in particular, where, you know, they know that there are these sort of divisions that they can play to.
Yeah. Now, so some of the things Russian officials said were quite extreme. So I think it was Putin's spokesperson, is it Dmitry Peskov? He said, you know, this shows that Germany is preparing for war.
I can't imagine why they would do that after Russia invaded someone.
and another one, maybe it was the same one, official said that, you know, there's divisions in the Bundeswehr, which is the German armed forces, about some of them really want to get involved and strike at Russia.
Bloodthirsty, you know, it's
which was all ridiculous.
From my understanding of what was in the call, so much of it was just logistical stuff. You know, it's not even a thing that you can have an opinion on in terms of being, you know, pro or anti-war. It's like they're talking about, are there enough nuts of type 6H that they're going to have to send, or will they have to order more? You know, it's
Yeah, the interesting stuff was, what are the Ukrainians likely to do with these missiles? You know, could they attack the Kerch Bridge, which is the bridge linking Crimea with Russia and is like apparently symbolic of Russia's influence over Crimea? And how many missiles would that take? What kind of technical support? It sounds like these missiles, you have to program them, and it's not a straightforward task. It's not like putting in an address on your GPS. So I thought that was the stuff that was kind of makes sense in the context of if we give them to Ukraine, what are the sort of follow-on?
Yeah, what will we have to actually do? What's the support that we need to provide to these?
And how quickly could we get hands off with that support? How quickly can we train Ukrainians to do it themselves?
Right.
And all that sort of makes sense in terms of scoping out the implications. From the minister's point of view, it's how much does this put us on the hook in terms of being directly involved? And are we comfortable with that? I guess one question I asked at the time, or wondered at the time, is whether it will actually make any difference at all. So it seems like a brilliant case study of seizing an opportunity.
Right.
You know, if they intercepted that and just reported it internally, it's like, well, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
This seems like
file that and, you know, put it away somewhere to never look at it again.
Yeah, good job. But it's not a game changer in any way, whereas this seems like it has the potential to change something, like strategically.
Right. This is a lot more potential to actually have a strategic impact than just, you know, filing it away somewhere and forgetting about it. You know,
I
think it's,
whoever's responsible would go home feeling like, we had a
good
shot
job
there.
Today, you know.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting lessons from this is sort of the depth and complexity of information warfare, right? That it ranges from TikToks from the front line to planting stories to press to like hacking websites and putting up whatever or taking things down to faking evidence to just, you know, here you take a real thing, which is, by the way, like absolutely classic information wars, to take something real and then frame the narrative around it. Like, because that's a lot better than just making something up, because if you make something up, it's debunked, right? It can be disproven. Whereas if you give something like a 38 German technical discussion about nuts and bolts, you know, you could say anything happened at minute 35 and no one's going to know. So it's, on the one hand, it's a bit of a masterclass in information warfare. And on the other hand, it's sort of if you've got bad ingredients, it doesn't matter how good the chef is, it's probably not going to be a great meal. Like, it's just...
Thanks a lot, Gra.
Thanks a lot, Dom.